This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. The fishers didn't make it to Waitemata. What's going on?
They're behind in the bait in Wilson for the first time in years.
Have they got plans to catch up? What are they doing?
Oh, they've always got plans to catch up. Don't worry about that.
Okay, I guess the great news is this week we're going to have our first chat with Adam Parrish all the way from New York. You'll be able to hear him next week on the Bridge Zone because we carry on with the end of Alan Morrison, the chat that we had with him, of course. That was pretty cool talking to him. He's a great chairman, isn't he?
He does a good job.
Very good job. Thank you, Alan.
To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can.
Judge Julie is swapped out for bailiff again. Got a couple of questions.
Patrick, Mariana has decided she's going to become a director this year. Or she's going to try.
So.
Well, yes and no. She's only got to page two of the first thing and she's stuck. I've explained to her that being from the Waikato, the clarification period is the time between milk is milk and then it becomes butter. That's what it is, isn't it? The clarification period? No?
No, that's the clarification process.
Oh, okay.
And it talks about clarification period, at least I believe so. But it's just the term for when the opening leader leads face down, that means that their partner can ask questions about the opponent's auction if they want to at that stage, because it's really tricky. You want to have the opening leader choose their card and lead it face down without their partner leaping in before they lead and saying, oh, what did this three diamond bid mean? And then suddenly the opening leader leads the diamonds. If you lead your card face down and the opponent wants to know, ask questions about the opponent's auction, if by any chance they uncover something that should have been alerted or something like that, and it affects the opening lead, you'd then call the director, and the director may well let the opening leader retract their card and choose a different lead now that that information has come to light that might have affected their lead.
Right.
So let's say you have a situation where a bit of diamonds by dummy should have been alerted. Well, you can't leap in there before your partner makes the lead and try to say, oh, you know, what was this? Should it have been alerted? When your partner leads face down, as of course they should, when it comes to light and declares, oh, damn, I'm sorry, I meant to alert that. That was a transfer. With that new information, you might call the director and the opening leader might say, oh, I thought that was showing diamonds. So yes, it affects my lead. Now, let's say the opening leader just bangs their card down without leading it face down. The other defender can ask questions when it's their turn to play. So it might go lead, play a card from dummy. Now it's that other defender's turn to play. They can ask questions. Now, if it comes up that something should have been alerted now that wasn't, well, you can no longer go back and change that lead. But you can still complain to the director at the end of the hand. But now the director's got to decide whether or not that might have changed the results and have a look at it rather than it going back. So that's one of the reasons for leading face down, is if your partner wants to ask questions before dummy goes down on the table, then it's useful.
Okay, I've got a couple of quick questions from the novice group, and they're old chestnuts, but they still don't know the answers. One of them is the revoke law. Sometimes you get penalised one trick. Sometimes you get penalised two tricks. Why is that?
Well, the revoke law has changed over the years. Current situation is that, first of all, in order for there to be any tricks at all, your side needs to have won at least one trick from the revoke onwards. Let's say you revoke, but declarer takes all the tricks from that point anyway. The declarer doesn't get any extra tricks if from the point of the revoking side hasn't won any, right? So normally the one trick and two trick is whether or not it was a trick that you won by trumping something. So if you're playing no trumps, it's always one. If you're playing in a suit, if you win the trick by revoking, and the only way you can do that is by actually roughing in, then it's two tricks, as long as your side's won at least two tricks from that point onwards. So that's the one or two tricks. It's one trick when your side didn't win the trick, i.e. the revoker discarded, or two tricks when your side did win the trick, i.e. the revoker trumped in. Obviously, you've got to have won at least one or two tricks for them to be there to be transferred. And there's always the case that even though it says one or two, you can get more if the innocent side or non-offending side has been disadvantaged by more. So if it's a situation where you get one trick, but for some reason that stopped you getting to dummy or something and you've got some tricks over there and it wound up costing you two tricks, then you'd get two tricks by saying we've been disadvantaged by more than the one trick you gave us.
Well, I've got one more question. Accepting it or not accepting an insufficient bid? And I know this isn't the rule they're asking about, but what they're asking about is how do you decide?
I would say the answer is no, don't accept it, unless for some reason you can think of it giving you an advantage. And then you should accept it if you can think of a reason that it gives you an advantage to accept it.
Sorry, Bailiff, we're out of time this week. We will give you the full explanation of the reason of why to accept it next week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's really awesome, yeah.
We're back with Alan Morris, the chairman of NZ Bridge. This final segment starts with the topic of numbers entering into the tournament event.
Yeah, it was good in the early part of this year. You'd have to say that Papatoa, the number of tables they had was pretty good. Auckland three nights were 26 tables every night, slightly down on anticipation, probably not too bad. Thames, I thought was pretty good, had a good turnout. I look at Auckland because I live at present. Nighttime bridge is a disaster. When you're getting the Auckland Bridge Club, might get 7-8 tables in the evening.
Face to face.
That's more than Hamilton are getting.
Yeah, well, I was talking to somebody from your club on the weekend who plays during the week and they might get 3 tables. There's some big issues that we have to have an honest conversation about.
Mm. So, look, getting back to this online thing, I'm not buying it, Helen. I don't think we got any opportunity to ask for an online tournament this year. There was just no mention of it. Our club would certainly have run some online tournaments if we'd have got the chance, and I believe others would as well. I think we've basically been stonewalled here. It just happened. All of a sudden, tournament schedule was out. There was no opportunity to apply for an online tournament if you wanted one.
Oh, you might be right.
I am right. Some of the online bridge haters have definitely got their way here. Might not be the end of the story. You know, there's a lot of online players, and I've talked to some of them. You know, New Zealand Bridge is not the only game in town.
No,
and,
it's not.
It's a pretty easy matter for people to start playing their tournament bridge online in Australia or wherever. And if New Zealand Bridge is keen for that to happen, it just might.
It might. But equally, I could argue that we've got a lot of our senior elite players who don't play club bridge either.
That's true.
Whether it was online or whether it's face-to-face, they don't play. So they don't support the domestic game at all.
Well, some of them have their own real reasons for not doing that.
Yeah.
And when they can play, they do play. I've got no experience outside of Hamilton on that.
Well, I can share with you, Auckland as a region, their participation is nearly non-existent. Akarana is just about closed. Where they used to play, they don't play anymore, whether it's online or not. And there is an opportunity there. I don't disagree with you, Barry. There is an opportunity, whether it was here or anywhere else, for that club to be doing something totally different. They don't play at any of the clubs during the week at all. They belong to clubs because they have to belong to a club to be able to play in a tournament.
I don't know what the answer is, Hamilton. Our daytime sessions are not too bad in Hamilton. We're getting maybe 20 tables on a Friday in total and sort of 10 to 14 or 12 to 14 on a Tuesday, the two daytime sessions. But the nighttime sessions, as you said, they're just a train wreck. We've got 3, 4, 5, 6 tables sometimes.
Daytime bridge isn't the issue. It's the nighttime bridge. Maybe it's an online solution for nighttime bridge. That's not answering your tournament question, but answering the issue around online.
I did speak to David Beecham from, he's in Sydney, I think, and he was telling me that nighttime bridge in Sydney, and one of the main issues there is the traffic. So people are working, they're going to come home. People aren't going to go out again to play bridge, battle the traffic on the way home, have dinner, and then get back in it. And from what he told me, basically all of their nighttime, if there's any, is just online for the traffic reason. And I guess Auckland's got a little bit of...
Much of Auckland would be the same thing, unless you're in a small club and your membership's coming from a close proximity. And there are some clubs that would be doing okay. And then you've got other clubs like Franklin. It's so bloody far to go to anywhere else. They've got support in their community.
Hamilton doesn't have the traffic issue, but we're no better off as far as nighttime bridge goes.
Yeah. Have you asked why?
The number one reason is that they've got other commitments and there's too much to fit in. I believe people like to play bridge twice a week. And if that twice a week fits for the older generation, it's generally the two daytime sessions. But there's quite a few people at our bridge club that play about three times. So they're one nighttime sessions and both daytime sessions. Some of them are two nighttime sessions and one daytime sessions. The average is around about three. How many days a night do you play, Barry?
I'd only play once a week, but I mean, I can't really play the daytime sessions. You know, after COVID, people were really just didn't really come back in the nighttime sessions. And then when people did go along and found there were only three or four tables, it was not very attractive for them to go back.
Yeah.
It became a bit of a vicious circle.
It did. I play once a week. That's it.
A lot of people were saying that, oh, you know, a lot of our players are playing online bridge, the Auckland Bridge Club online, but really think there's that bigger numbers from Hamilton playing online at Auckland. There's not like three or four tables. There's not that many.
No.
So I just don't quite know what you can do to get these people back. They've just got out of the habit. And then when they come along to the club and found there are only three or four tables, decided that it wasn't really where they wanted to be.
I didn't ask your other question and I can't answer.
Can I ask a question about tournaments? So each club still has the right to host an online event during the week, yeah?
You can have online during the week, fine.
So let's say we want to host a tournament online. Can we take one of our weekend tournaments and play that like over two Friday nights online?
Probably. I would support it, but I'd have to go back to the manual.
Yeah.
And okay. I just don't have that in front of me, so I don't know. But look, conceptually, I think we should be trying to support clubs who want to be innovative about play and how they support their community. And if you want to run an event on a Friday evening or a Thursday or a Wednesday or a Monday or a Sunday, then I think we should try and accommodate that. So when we do this review, which is coming up about the tournaments, we should be very open-minded about all of this stuff.
Excuse me.
It sounds like you're saying that if we wanted to run an online tournament on the weekend, we could. We could apply for that and possibly get that granted. I was under the impression that wasn't going to happen.
You're unlikely to get it through. On a Sunday you might, but not on a Saturday.
The original question was, we've got a tournament that's normally on a Saturday, face-to-face, obviously, but if we wanted to trial it to go online and, say, spread it over two Fridays, that could be a potential.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
And I would support that innovation.
Ellen's just saying that although we wouldn't be allowed to run a tournament on a Saturday, that a Sunday is probably more likely, I guess, where there wouldn't be so many clashes.
Correct.
So a Sunday might be a better option. I mean, Tim's had theirs on Sunday and pretty big numbers
out,
in the teams.
They did really to get the numbers.
Yeah, but quite often there aren't a lot of events that are played over 2 days. You've got a few national congresses or a number of congresses. So you've got Tauranga, you've got Christchurch coming up. So Sundays in the main don't conflict as often as Saturdays conflict.
Okay.
So maybe Sunday might be the way to go. I think that would probably be better than trying to run it, as Ellen says, over two nights or two different days. You know, maybe a Sunday might be the way to go. I'm pleased to hear that. I just looked at the tournament schedule and was horrified and thought, wow, that online think tank that I actually was a part of, it sounded like most of their recommendations just went in the bin. You know, there's no opportunity for online bridge at all. And I only saw two tournaments this year one in February and one in August.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I do. It was the North Island Pairs and the South Island Pairs. And if you want to play online bridge, go to Australia.
I don't want to make it to Australia, but that's a reality. They could come this way as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we did get a few of their people playing at our online tournaments as well when we were running them, and the numbers were pretty huge. I just don't think it's very forward-thinking what's happened here. But, hey, somebody's got their way.
My other question was, you know, the difference between, in terms of percentage of our players, it's only a very small percent that they're open players. Is that correct?
That would be right.
The majority are in the intermediate.
Junior intermediates.
Yeah. Yep.
Very much so. Total Open players are probably, I don't have the stats in front of me, probably 10%.
I think on the ones a few years back was somewhere around the 10, 11%. How do we improve that?
Well, there's two ways to look at that, I think. The big challenge is that when they change things up, they introduce the restricted grade. Because we had a lot of people who were open players at the bottom end who just got beaten up. And so they don't want to participate. So we've got to find a way that we encourage participation more across the board. Handicapping might be one of those solutions. So you can run an open event and you can run a handicapped event. People can succeed and they can get prizes and that sort of stuff. So there are a lot that got regraded. They don't want to come and play and open and be beaten up. When you look at how you run tournaments or how you run an event, to give them an opportunity. So you take Thames, by example, it was pretty well supported by their local players. Not too bad.
Yep.
But by and large, it's hard for them. It's really hard. Yeah. When you've got Emerald Grandmasters, that field on the Sunday was quite strong and many of the teams were quite strong. There were a whole raft of weak teams. But, yeah, so it's a challenge.
Interestingly, there was one team there, and I better not name them, but they were pretty close to the bottom. That same team last year did really well in that event. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility for that to happen.
Probability-wise, it would be 1 in 100.
Well, absolutely. You know, I just remember when I was an intermediate playing in open tournaments against the Braithwaites and Turners of the world back in those days. And, you know, they were the luminaries of the game at the time. A lot of people in those days wanted to play against those sort of people. Alan, if you're out playing golf this weekend, you won't get to play against Tiger, you know.
No, but I have a handicap and therefore I can play against the field.
Right.
I personally quite like playing against good players because I think that's how you improve your game.
And I think that's exactly the same in bridge as well. I mean, at Congress, the restricted open section is fairly full, got good numbers, but they don't transfer that into the restricted open actual events. And probably in saying that, there's not a lot of actual restricted open.
They're very few. And maybe we need more.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, maybe we need less 5A events and more restricted open events and a different open events for the higher end, the more elite players.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know what this proves, but I'm going to bring it up. So Lysandra and Tim from Auckland, who played in the open trials this year and did extremely well, knocked out the favourites and went within just a few imps of actually winning the whole thing, and have now made the New Zealand team to go to China at the APBF. I don't know whether you remember this, Alan, but last year they played in the restricted open teams, which was won by Mariana's team, and they wound up seventh in the event. And so the restricted open teams are not that easy.
No, it's. I'm not saying it's easy.
I know on average, if you have played the event 10 times, probably the Emerald Grandmasters are going to win quite a few of those times, but it won't be 10.
No, it won't be. It won't be 10.
I'm not too sure it'll be 9.
I can tell you about Tim and Lysandra, okay? I had representation for Congress this year that they shouldn't be allowed to play in the restricted because they were still restricted at that point of time.
Absolutely.
And they should be barred from it.
No, that's terrible.
Yep, I had representation from certain people that should happen.
Look, I also heard...
It's not going to happen.
I also heard that... In the interclub team, they were invited to represent whoever in the open, and they said, look, respectably, we decline because we don't think we're good enough. And, well, here we are. They're part of our open team. But how cool is that?
And here are two young people. They absorb things like sponges.
Yes.
They are very enthusiastic. They're getting a lot of support. They're nice people. I've played with Lysandra personally. She's lovely to play with.
Yeah.
And if we're lucky enough, they'll be around for a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Mariana's Helen's team has been dining out on this story for, you know, ever since. and they're delighted to see Tim and Lysandra making the open team, I can tell you that.
We are. It's great. I know that when Restricted Open came along, there was quite good numbers. And then it seems to have fizzed out. And why, I'd have no idea.
I don't know the answer.
Here I am breaking my neck to get out of it.
Because the open events seem to be getting pretty good numbers.
Yeah.
And like you say, Restricted Open, not so much.
Yeah.
Things change. Things do seem to change. Like you say, it was all a rage for a while there. I think you're right. A lot of people don't want to be open. So if we change the grading in any way so that there were more open players, I don't think that'd be a popular move.
It wouldn't be popular. And I don't think it'd increase the numbers.
Yeah,
well, it wouldn't, but the Open is doing okay, I think, in general. You look at some of the numbers, even like down south, big numbers playing in some of those Open tournaments.
Just going back, turn the clock back, you asked what else was on the agenda. Clearly is, what do we do with the regional championships? Okay, and we need to reach a landing on that pretty soon. And that may finish up being a mix of online and face-to-face. I don't know yet. But I think, you know, if we're sensible, the mixed grade is the one that's growing in momentum. And maybe we need not only an open and a woman and a seniors and an intermediate, but maybe a mixed grade in there.
All right. Just before we go off this international open team, I'd also like to say congratulations to Jeremy Fraser Hoskins and Zachary for making that open team with Lysandra and Tim.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they were so close to winning that.
I want to get a photo of that when they walk in, that New Zealand is being represented by these young people and thinking, oh, here's New Zealand and they've got some youngies coming through again.
When you look at them going to China, okay, the young team going to China, and the oldest statesman in that team?
Michael Wibley. Ashley Barr, yeah, that's right. I'm just wondering, I was actually just writing down, I was trying to work out the average age of that team. Maybe in the 30s, but it might not be either. It might be in the 20s.
Well, you've got Ashley, you've got Nick, he'd be in his 30s, I would think, early 30s.
Yes. Yeah.
And the rest of them would be in their 20s.
It's just good to see, Mary.
I think Zachary must be around about 23.
He'd be in his early 20s.
Yeah, but I think it's
Lysandra's in her early 20s.
If we've got these ages wrong, you better do a good job of the editing, Maria.
And I have to go.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for answering the awkward questions. And we'll have you back one of these days when you relent.
Okay, but I've got something to say.
So thanks so much for your time.
Take care. Well, ciao.
So, have you got a tip for us this week?
Oh, I have. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away. And it's one that many people are guilty of. My tip for the week is, don't bid your hand twice. So, I know what you're thinking. I know you're thinking. If you told partner that you've got a limit raise and partner signs off, it's not usually right for you to bid on, you know, for whatever reason. And even because the opponents are competing, doesn't mean that you should all of a sudden bid game. Sometimes it's right to compete another level if you've got more trumps particularly. If you've already told partner pretty much what you've got, don't bid it again. If you've opened two no trumps, it's up to partner now. You've told them what you've got.
I see. Same with week twos?
Yep, absolutely. You've told them you've got a week two. They know exactly what you've got. Let them decide. Once you've limited your hand, that's the end of the auction for you, usually. It's a very rare occasion when it might be right to bid on.
I guess a lot of people actually do that. Well, I've actually got a smidgey more. Don't you want to know whether I'm at the top end of my limit bid or not?
I wanted to know that, I've asked.
That's right. Anyway, I've got a question. Have you decided whether or not you were going to build a bridge regime for getting better? Or is that all you've got the way that you are?
What do you mean?
I'm at my limit. I can't stretch anymore.
I haven't actually done anything about it yet, but I just might. I'll have to go in and have a closer look. Maybe after talking to Adam Parrish next week, I'll be inspired.
Right. Hey, a quick thing. The podcast, Sorry Partner, did you get the email?
I see they're down to once a month or something now, are they?
With a repeat. That's right.
How would they go having one every week for 6 years and a half?
I mean, it's not hard. We're lucky that we have the flexibility to be able to jump on virtually at any time that suits the other, regardless of whether it's at midnight or first thing in the morning. I was surprised to read that their podcasts, because obviously they were doing weekly, and then they went to fortnightly, and now they're doing one fresh drop per month and a repeat per month. It says all about cost. Maybe they should have a chat to us, because ours is almost zero cost. I'm not too sure what the difference is of running a podcast over there than it is to running over here. They've got exactly the same tools that are available to us. And actually, one of the things that Adam Parrish was thinking about was contemplating whether or not a podcast was on his horizons as well.
I would have to say that after, what have we done, about 330-something episodes of this thing, probably by now?
Yeah, we're heading into our seventh year in June.
And I think it's fair to say that you haven't got many compliments in that time, but I'm going to... I'm going to give you one now, so don't expect it any more for the rest of the year. But if it wasn't for you doing as much work as you do editing this thing and getting this thing on, the show would not go on. That's all I'm saying.
Isn't that a Queen song? Thanks for that. I mean, it's fun. People give us feedback everywhere we go. Some random will email us out of the blue, and we're like, oh, that's cool. They listen.
It is good to know. Sometimes when we're talking on this, it's like nobody's listening. Yeah, there are people out there, and I was talking to somebody at the Auckland tournament. They're asking about the trip up, and I said, oh, well, you know, we didn't drive up. And they said, oh, yeah, we know that, because they've been listening to the bridge zone. And they knew that we'd come up in the yellow typhoon.
Funny.
So, yes, there are people out there listening.
And thank you to everybody that hasn't missed an episode. I'm not going to name you. You know who you are, and we know who you are. That's more important. So thanks for that. All righty, Barry, that's about it for this week. Can't wait for next week.
Coming up this weekend, Tauranga Congress is on. Are you playing in any of that?
No, sorry. January's sort of
out. Wait till I tell, I'm going to tell Adam on you.
No, our granddaughter, she's over from Hong Kong, and it's her first birthday on the 26th of Jan. We're having a big celebration.
So as well as the Tauranga Congress, they have got the Robin Young Teams being held in Marlborough. That's a 10A event. And the Otago Festival Pairs being held over the weekend. So lots of bridge getting played over what is Auckland's anniversary weekend. Not that anybody else will care that it's Auckland's anniversary. And then the week after that, it'll be a few tears as we all head off to the Gold Coast Congress for the last time.
I know, and I'm not going to that either. Might pop over to the Melbourne Cricket Grounds.
The MCG.
Could be a plan. You do the last of the Gold Coast, and I do the first of the Melbourne Cricket Grounds. Okay, everybody, that's it for me. So if you're going to Tauranga, all the best, and also down south, good luck to everybody.
We'll have some results for you next week.
See ya.
Bye for now. Okay.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.